203 DGS. We have a lot of show coming up. Ricky Horton's going to join us. My buddy Craig Gass, who is a comedian and the best impressionist I've ever heard, is going to be at the Funny Bone starting on the 12th. He's going to come in and hang out with us for a while. We have The Tank with Alvin Reed, Mike Elam. Lots to talk about with the debate coming up tonight. Yeah, a whole bunch going on.
All right. It's going to be a fun show.
Can we talk about Hoosiers for a second?
Absolutely.
When I say Hoosier, what do you think? What do you picture?
University of Indiana football team.
No.
Hoosiers around these parts.
St. Louis Hoosiers.
Jorts.
Okay, good start. Yep.
But I had jorts back in the day, too. So.
Yeah, I would like a full disclaimer on this. I consider myself to be a Hoosier, so everything I say, like,
I think everybody
just
is
take
to
it with a
degree.
Grain of salt.
Well, it's all relative.
Yeah.
Like, when I first had success in radio in St. Louis, and I really thought I was a big deal. And then I realized, oh, in Chicago, no one even knows my name. And if I were a big deal in Chicago, no one in New York knows
correct.
My name.
Yeah.
So it's all relative. So, yeah, I think that anyone outside of St. Louis thinks everyone in St. Louis are Hoosiers. And to some extent, we probably are. I definitely am. I mean, I'm from South Roxanna, Illinois. So you can take the boy out of Sorox, but you can't take the Sorox out of the boy. And Grafton, Alton, come on. Hoosierville. But I was saying to Rage, because we were talking about that I was at a place where it was just wall-to-wall Hoosiers. And here's the thing, though. I kind of don't consider myself a Hoosier anymore. Maybe an elevated Hoosier.
A classy Hoosier, if you will.
A classy Hoosier. Hoosier that's made a little money. But when I go to Schnucks, I dress so terribly that if I didn't know me, and someone goes, see that guy right there? It's pretty successful. I'd be like, zero chance. No. Or if I went to a neighborhood that was kind of more Hoosiery and saw a guy dressed like me at the Schnucks, I'd be like, man, look at these people. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just too judgy because I look exactly like the people I would judge. And I don't judge them harshly because, again, Hoosier.
I feel maybe with Hoosiers, it takes one to know one, you know? So maybe you're not being judgmental. Maybe it's just like, hey, I recognize myself in you.
There's just different levels. Like, I appreciate a Hoosier who just leans in. They just embrace it.
But is it okay to be a Hoosier who strives for more?
Of course.
Try to elevate yourself as a Hoosier. That's what I respect more. A Hoosier who's willing to elevate.
Yeah, be at the upper echelon.
Try to not be as much of a Hoosier anymore.
Did you have him in Detroit?
Yeah, we didn't call him that, but...
What'd you call him?
I don't know. My family?
Probably slurs.
My kin.
My kin,
my whole family.
Is there sort of like a poor / rural part of where you grew up?
All of it.
Yeah, like so the town that I was actually a kid in is kind of that. It's kind of like right on the borderline, and if you would go like... So we grew up in a little town called Westland, right? So it's a suburb. To the north, you have Livonia. That's where all the nice people live. That's where we moved when we moved on up, like the Jeffersons. Yeah. We moved there about freshman year in high school. And if you went south one city to Garden City, Garden City, that's the Hoosier place.
Ah.
But, like, we're all intermingled and intermixed. And, it's like here. It's the same as here. You can figure out which neighborhoods are which. Yep. So they're all the same. Suburbs are suburbs. You know, like, outside of big cities in the Midwest, you're not going to get much of a difference. You're going to have... the upper middle class McMansion types,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have a trailer park on the edge of town, and you're going to have small houses and things like that's just that's same here, same as here.
Yeah. Razor's Edge.
Absolutely. I would like to do a little pop culture chat for this day's Razor's Edge, if that's okay with everyone. Mm-hmm. And the thing that sparked this idea is the fact that I saw that open casting has begun for the new Harry Potter TV series for HBO. They are doing open casting for the roles of Harry, Ron, and Hermione. And
I'm going to be Ron.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, how could they possibly find better casting than the original Harry Potter movies? How are they going to find people that are going to do a better job than those I mean, it was really, really great casting. And the fact that they all grew up, like, you take a risk whenever you hire child actors that, like, maybe one's going to grow faster than the other or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, one is going to be a foot taller than the others, and it's not
going to get ugly like the beaver did.
Oh, the beave got ugly. I guess I wasn't.
He went through a tough stage.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are opening this up. Anyone can try out for the part. Any small child, I suppose, can try to be Harry Potter, Ron Weasley, or Hermione Granger. And I thought, what an impossible task.
Yep.
It was a perfect original casting.
Leave it alone. Why can't we leave anything alone?
Or just do like something that happens later. Like, I get wanting to expand these universes, right? Because there are a million stories you could tell, but retelling the same story doesn't seem to be a winning proposition.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long ago that these movies came out, really. I mean, it was the early 2000s. I think it all wrapped up around 2012 or 2013. It's not long enough ago to be like, time for an official reboot.
Yeah.
But this is going to be shot over the course of like 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, we've had a million Spider-Mans and Batmans. Yes. And I mean, so like reboots are not that big of a deal. I think we're somewhat used to it, right? But I just wish with a universe that big, like Star Wars or the George R. R. Martin, I wish you would just find a new story in it.
I agree.
Instead of redoing the same characters.
You know what I like? I like a good prequel.
Yeah. I mean, I actually like going beyond, too. You go to the end and you're like, let's start with new people in the future.
Mm-hmm. I would like a John Wick prequel.
Oh.
Ooh.
Back when he was...
Yeah, when he was working.
He was kind of a bad guy, right?
I think he's a bad guy.
But I mean, I think he was like considered... He was a, quote, little bit of a reformed bad guy at the beginning of the first one.
Yes.
Or trying to be reformed and then relapsed.
Although I do still think it's amazing. He killed 480 people.
He's the hero.
Yes. He killed almost 500 people.
I mean, granted, most of them were trying to kill him.
He's like a villain. He's a horrible villain. And
are you,
like,
though, if they're coming at you and you get them first?
But they're not coming at you. He was coming at them. They're just protecting themselves.
That's true. Some of them in the first one when he was doing the revenge movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of perfect casting, a lot of people think Pat Sajak could never be replaced on Wheel of Fortune, but he has been replaced. Ryan Seacrest just hosted his first episode of Wheel of Fortune.
It's a good replacement.
Yeah, he says hosting Wheel is a dream job, and he can't believe how lucky he is, which is great. I'd love to hear that rather than someone having some sort of lackluster response.
Ryan Seacrest is one of those guys who pushes my bruise because... I acknowledge the difference between us. He's tall and handsome and looks the part and works a lot harder than me. But he did the same thing as me, and I think I do it better. And just my innate jealousy and resentment of men who are better than me. But he's on my nerve.
He does a lot. I think it was CBS Saturday morning I was watching. They did a special on him because of this new Wheel hosting job. And they were just detailing all of these different jobs he has. He has American Idol. He does New Year's Eve. He does like, seriously, like 50 things. Well, he has his radio show.
I always told Brian Kilmeade from Fox News is one of my buddies. And I would tell him right to his face, I am better than you. I do a better radio show than you do, but he outworks me 100 to 1. Like, that dude never stops working. Like, when it's the weekend, I'm done. I'm not doing anything. And he's working 3 more jobs. So it's part of it.
So the last thing I wanted to talk about in our little pop culture chat here, I think this is an interesting story. So everyone knows who Shailene Woodley is, right? Mm-hmm. She used to go out with Aaron Rodgers, but she's an actress. And I think her most famous role is probably from Big Little Lies. She also did like the Divergent movie series. But she had, whenever Donald Trump was nearly assassinated back in July, Melania Trump released a statement. And I thought it was a nice statement just talking about, you know, the fact that Donald Trump is still a grandfather. He loves music, all this stuff. She was basically humanizing him in her statement. And it was a 2-page thing. I think page 1 was very generic. Page 2 was more political. Mm-hmm. So Shailene Woodley reposted the first page, the kind of generic, just like, let's be kind to each other and not put up with stuff like this. And she said that she was really surprised because she was in circles of people that she deeply respected, like her friends, her colleagues, who were on the left saying, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe the assassin missed. Maybe this was a conspiracy. She was just shocked that people were saying things like this because someone almost lost their life. So she decided to share the first page of Melania's letter back in July on social media. She says she found it to be a beautiful reminder that beneath all the political drama, Trump is still a human with kids and grandkids, and wishing for his death is not compassionate. So she posts this, and she said she had a bunch of friends reaching out to her like, hey, are you doing okay? Because everyone online is really mad at you. So she had a huge backlash from releasing this kind of generic kumbaya statement saying, like, I'm glad Donald Trump didn't die. People were super, super mad at her just for posting something like that, which I think is interesting because I don't necessarily think she's even a Trump person. She's been very vocal about supporting Bernie Sanders in the past. She's basically was just saying, like, I'm glad that this person didn't lose their life. And people found fault with that.
I'm team Shaylin on this one because I said kind of the same thing after that, because how do you not? I think that everyone, to be a good person, to be the best person you can, part of it is to be textured, to not be monolithic. And I don't like Donald Trump. There's no one who listens to this show who would ever mistake me for a Trumper. But he's a person, and he has a family. He has his own life. He has, like, grandkids and all this stuff. I don't want to see anyone get shot in the face.
Not to mention how terrible it would have been for the country.
Yeah.
I mean, can you even imagine what would have happened if that bullet had not missed? It would have sent us into, I think we would have been in complete and utter chaos at that point. So I just think it's kind of a shame that she had to deal with that. Not saying I agree with her on every issue, because I think she has a couple of wacky ideas, but I think we can all agree that it's good when people don't die.
Yeah.
221 DGS. Oh, you know who I really dislike? I mean, I really dislike this person. And they're a fictional character.
Okay.
Harry Potter.
Dr. House.
Oh, yeah, I hate him too.
Okay, so why do you hate Dr. House?
He's such a D.
Yeah.
Like, he's been showing up on my TikTok, and I remember watching a couple episodes, and I'm like, and I've always been like this. I love my dad, good guy, but he was kind of mean. He was just sort of, like, gruff and didn't suffer fools. And there were characters like that in every show when I was a kid. Fred Flintstone was like that. George Jetson's boss, Mr. Spacely, was like that. There was always a jerk for some reason. You know, Jackie Gleason and the Honeymooners. And I get these TikToks of the show House, and he's always a jerk. And I know it's a television show. I know Hugh Laurie has done lots of other things. He's probably not like that.
You know he's British.
I do. Yeah, and I just can't stand him.
That makes him nice.
I get it. He's a big old blank on that show.
I think meanness is my deal breaker.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's so smug in that show too.
Yeah.
Like, he just makes you want to punch him in the face.
But sometimes the people deserve it.
The on House?
Yeah. Not just that. Like,
the patients?
Sometimes people deserve to be talked to that way.
Yeah, you're right. They
both
should,
fictionally and in real life.
We should hit more cancer patients. No, they really
That's not.
It.
I never saw one episode of that show. I'm just saying, sometimes people need that.
Wasn't he also addicted to drugs as a doctor?
So. Oh, well, that's not good. Don't
I think
do
he
that.
Was like a dope fiend.
Okay.
In addition to being a big
the fictional
jerk.
Character.
Yes.
Let's be careful here.
Hugh Laurie is I don't like the way you've been talking
like,
about me.
That's not true, fellas.
I also, you know how, Rach, I famously have these jobs I would like to do,
like
a chocolatier and
delivering the mail on a train.
I saw a new one on TikTok. It was a train video, and a couple old guys in the engine, I guess. I'm well on my way to working on trains. And the guy who shovels the coal into the fire thing.
Sure.
That looks nice.
I'm not sure those people exist anymore, do they?
Only on, like, novelty trains.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You think that shoveling coal would be a fun job?
I'm sure. I'm positive after 5 minutes I'd be like, this blows.
I mean, it's going to be like 100 degrees in there.
I know, but there's just something just satisfying about it.
Okay.
I'm not sure they would agree. I think they would.
Yeah,
I think
it was probably torturous work.
I think if you shovel coal on a train, it's because you had literally no other options in your life but to shovel coal.
But if it pays really well.
Doubtful, but
it doesn't.
I know. I know.
I'm quite certain of that.
What if it was like, we'll give you $200,000 a year? I'm like, I'm shoveling coal.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember your first train ride?
Yes, probably. Like, every kid in Illinois elementary school goes to Springfield.
Yeah, that was my first real train, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have that.
I don't think I was actually on a real train other than, like, the monorail at Disney until I was probably, I don't know, like, 13 or 14.
When we went to Europe for a few months after taking the bar exam, we had Eurorail passes.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I felt very continental.
Those are nice, too.
Yeah.
Smooth ride.
You just feel fancy.
So, Andrew, you didn't go to Springfield. Have you ever been on a train?
I went to Union Station with my parents when I was like 7 or 8 years old from Alton. We went from Alton to Union
That's
Station
fun.
On the Amtrak. That was a fun little day. And then I did the Polar Express when it was here last year, last like Christmas time. So as far as I know, most of the time there's Santa Claus on the train.
I miss Rail Cruise America. Back when I first started in the early 2000s, I did live endorsements for Rail Cruise America, and it was just a really beautifully restored old train, and you would take a three-hour tour. That's when Kimswick passed something saying that I should be taken off the air because I said it's a great place to get porcelain kitties. you could go to Kimswick or you go to the east side for like 3 hours. They would serve you a really nice dinner, and I just loved it. I could do that every night.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite things to do is just get on YouTube and watch different videos of people riding on a train.
I know you tell me that I would love the bullet train in Japan.
Yeah, you would.
It's maglev, right?
It doesn't
like it?
Feel fast. It does not it's, feel
But is it,
like,
isn't it a maglev?
I don't
Or
I don't
is it
know.
Just, is it on an actual track?
I have no idea.
Huh.
I'm sorry. I don't know.
Way to go, Rage.
Sorry. I know they have maglev trades in places like that, the cool places.
He likes saying maglev.
I know. It means levitated.
And
by
I
magnetism.
Don't know anything, so I'm like, I have no idea. But you would love it, Dave. I know you said, you know, you'd be kind of trepidatious because it's going so quickly, but it does not feel like you're going
no,
super
it doesn't.
Fast.
Yeah, the TGV is really nice.
Also, I shouldn't say this on the air because I'll be shamed for it, but a friend of ours is involved with the Arch and has invited us to take a trip up the Arch, and I was like, I did. It's like right on the edge for me because I've lived here my whole life. On a clear day, I could see the glint off the Arch from where I grew up in Illinois. I've never been in the Arch, I'm not afraid of it. Like, I don't think it's going to fall the 660 feet to my death. One got stuck the other day and they just had to walk down some stairs. But the claustrophobic part of it, like, it's just, I don't know if it's worth the payoff. So I might do it just for the show and you can videotape me freaking out or whatever. But
I think you should do it. I've never done it either. I'm not a heights person, but like you were saying earlier, you've been in buildings taller than that,
yeah.
So it's not going to be the end of the world.
And I kind of look at it this way. Here, one of my many weird things. If I die when the Arch falls over, that's pretty good.
That's pretty St. Louis of you, Dave.
You will always be a part of St. Louis history and lore.
Thank you. Exactly. 233 DGS. We have Ricky Horton next. We have my buddy Craig Gass, who's an amazing impressionist and comedian. He'll be live in studio with us. Wheels, a sports, at least adjacent question for you. I saw a segment on television today that an NFL player wore one of the protective helmets in a game, and it was big news and just like, wow, look at this. Is it just because they look kind of goofy?
Yep.
That's it.
That's people. Yes, the opposition to wearing the extra padding. If you haven't seen them, it's just like extra padding that goes outside
kinda
the helmet.
Gives it a mushroom head.
Yeah, it makes the helmet look bigger. It is bigger, and it's kind of poofy looking, I guess you could say. Yeah, that's it. The argument against it is we don't like how it looks. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And over time, things like that change, right? I mean, there've always been for a long time in the NHL, nobody wore helmets, and a lot of guys resisted wearing helmets, and they were grandfathered in, so they didn't have to wear them. At some point, those kinds of things become more accepted. I'm still not entirely sure how much it works for things like CTE, the subconcussive hits, because that's just your brain shaking inside your skull. I know that I guess you can reduce the amount of force transferred through the helmet. But I mean, if your head moves,
yeah,
your brain shakes.
Yeah.
And when you fall or you get run into or somebody bumps you and your head goes jerked backwards, that's you're getting a little CTE every time.
I went through that when I started riding motorcycles as a grown up, and I rode as a kid, never had a helmet, just had like little dirt bikes and stuff like that. And then when I started riding again back in like 2002, I bought a Harley. Now, I don't think it's even arguable that the safest thing you can do on a motorcycle is have a expensive, well-made, full-face helmet. But Harley riders don't wear those. They wear the brain scoops, which are just like the tiniest helmet you can wear legally because it just that's the Harley look. And I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And I look back on that, and I just feel kind of dumb because I had small children, and I would have been safer with a full-face helmet, but I didn't look cool, didn't look the way I wanted to. Now with the bike that I have, which I've stopped riding because Phoebe saw a guy fly off a bike in Florida and it freaked her out, so I haven't ridden all summer. In fact, if anyone wants to buy a really, really nice BMW motorcycle with only 1,500 miles on it, first 10 grand takes it. But I bought a really nice, expensive, full-face helmet and felt better about it.
Yeah, it is interesting the sacrifices we will make for style.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's not true in most people's day-to-day lives, right? Like, yeah, it's not really going to impact any of us driving to work or whatever. But when people have a long-standing habit of doing things a certain way, they don't like to change it. Whether it's for the look or the feel, sometimes it's mm-hmm. the feel of it. Don't like how it feels, don't like how it sounds. Mm-hmm. I'm in the camp that you're in, Dave. If you tell me that it makes me safer, that's what I want to do, because I want to learn. As we learn, that's the thing that like using the sports an example. The older generations are always talking about how you're making everything soft. Well, no, we're getting smart. Like when you figure out that there's a better way to do something, you do it the better way. You don't just do it the old way because the old way was the old way. And I always use the analogy of seatbelts in cars. Cars didn't always have seatbelts. And then we realized, hey, you know what would really help? With all these crashes, we can put seatbelts on people and they won't fly through the windows and they won't slam into the metal dashboards. Notice dashboards aren't metal anymore. You know, we make all kinds of changes. Our tires are different. Everything. Well, the more we learn, the more we can go in that route. Mm-hmm. But then when you do that in sports, you're soft, which is so stupid. So stupid. Yeah, I would have tried to protect your brain too, buddy. But unfortunately, we didn't know any better at the time. It's not soft to be smart.
I just find it really interesting because isn't it only one player who decided to use
in the game? Yeah. Okay. A lot of them are doing it in practice, and there were a lot of them in preseason. And I think that's the step, right? They're going to have to go baby steps, like get used to it, get to the point where people aren't laughing at how dumb it looks, and get to the point where, by the way, it's just unnoticeable, right? Because this is my bigger thing on the helmet related issue. I'm not sure how much this helps, but even if it helps 2%, let's do what helps.
You know what Bolger
always
said?
Because if they do it, colleges and high schools will do it.
Could have been wrong, but he played the game. Bolger always told me the safest thing they could do is go back to the leather helmets they wore in the 1930s. Because it would change the way you played the game.
You wouldn't throw your body
at
people.
You wouldn't throw your head.
It's like rugby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They play. Right. I mean, they don't wear helmets in rugby.
Yeah.
And they don't. Don't get me wrong. They have their own injury issues. Very similar, right? Your brain is shaking. When your brain is shaking, you're doing brain damage. That's the way it is. And you can't fix that. But they don't have the same concussion things. They don't have as many. They hit hard, but it's not the same. Like line up across each other and slam into each other. The sport's designed differently, right? It's more motion oriented. The scrum is. You're starting from a standstill. It's not like we're going to line up 10 yards away and run as fast as we can into each other. So it's a different structure. But yes, he's not wrong. You would have to hit differently and tackle differently and run the football differently. Otherwise, you'd kill yourself.
So Michael Calhoun just reported that Amendment 3 has been given the okay to be on the ballot. Wheels, you are happy about this because you think the people should speak.
Yeah, I don't care how the vote goes, by the way. I don't care how the people of Missouri vote on Amendment 3 or on any other thing. But when something gets put on the ballot, people should decide it. I'm a big let's let voters decide issues like this instead of a minority of people. Because the only reason there was opposition to keeping it on the ballot was because they know what's going to happen. They know the people of Missouri are going to vote in a way they don't like. I do not want people in elected office doing that, saying, well, the majority of people disagree with me, so I'm not going to let them vote. That's not okay. It's not okay. It's not the democratic process. Everybody who tried to get these various amendments, whether it's Amendment 3, the sports gambling, whatever it is, they took the steps required by state law to put it to a vote of the citizens of the state. Once you've done that, leave it alone. Because I can promise you, if the polling showed that the result of this was going to go the other direction, they wouldn't have bothered. Right? If the polling showed that 60% are going to vote the way that Jay Ashcroft wants them to, or Judge Limbaugh wants them to, they would let it go. Because they're going to get the result they want. You don't get to obstruct the democratic process because you disagree with the way that people are going to vote. That's it. Again, it doesn't matter what the issue is. If it's on the ballot, if they've gone through the proper steps, then it stays.
I agree.
And if you don't like the outcome, you can move somewhere else.
I think more things should be decided by the vote of the people.
Especially simple policy things, right? Like, this is what this is. This is up to the people. I think we've done too much. And I understand the pure democracy is difficult, right? It may be even impossible, where you can't have every individual vote on every issue. That's why we have a representative democracy.
But think about the difference between when we founded the representative democracy. People in outstate Virginia could not be contacted to see what their vote was going
to
be.
You had to send a horse and carriage, yeah. Right? Like, we understand things. The access to information means that people have the ability to understand the full details of it. Plus, in that time, it's not like everybody was going through all the way through their high school education. A lot of people had to work on the family farm, or they had to work the family business, or they were in a place where they were poor and school was a luxury and not really. Like, that's a different time. This time period now, the only way you don't know about these issues is if you choose not to.
Speaking of politics, you are done with the discussions about the debate prep?
Oh, please. Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. I keep hearing all this, like, well, they're going to talk about strategy. Whether it's Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, whatever. These two people have been around for a long time in this field, right? Like, Kamala Harris has been in politics now for, what, 8, 12 years? I'm talking national politics, right? She's been the vice president for 4 years, was a presidential candidate before that. Donald Trump's been around forever in a public eye, but I mean, as a candidate since 2016, yeah. Right? 2015, whatever. You know what they're going to do. If you're Kamala Harris and you're prepping for this, you know what Donald Trump is going to do. What are you prepping for? And you should know your own policy. And you should know, like, if you said to me today, Wheeler, you're going to go tomorrow and you're going to debate sports stuff against Colin Cowherd, I don't need to prep. I know my stuff, and I know who he is, and he wouldn't know who I am because he's a bigger star. I mean, he's higher on the level. But the point is, I don't know that. I think they overthink these things, and then that leads to some of the weird performances. You're not yourself. You're not relying on your knowledge and your expertise and all of that. You're putting yourself in a position where you're going to be essentially acting. You're like, I have to learn these things and say these things this specific way. And for a lot of candidates, I think it hurts them. And obviously with Donald Trump, he's not doing any of that anyway, right?
Rach, you disagree?
I get what you're saying, but as a prepper myself, not that I've ever, you know, participated in a presidential debate, but like, for instance, Dave's on my show this week, and I knew exactly what we were going to talk about, and I probably didn't need to prep, but I still prepped just because I like to have my ducks in a row. It makes me feel better about the upcoming interview or whatever it is going on. So, I mean, I understand. I do think it's a little silly because you have heard that Kamala's camp is like dressing someone up as Trump and like making them speak in like the Trump voice and stuff, which I think is a little ridiculous. But I don't think preparing is necessarily like an indicator that they're doing something
wrong.
Yeah,
I'll go with what you're saying, Rach. I think that you always have to prepare. But if you know something, you don't need to just spend all this quote unquote extra time. Like, everything that she holds as a policy position should be because she said, I want to do this, which means you understand it. And you're debating Donald Trump. Policy is not going to be what this debate's going to be about. Mm-hmm. It's just not. What you have to understand is simple. He is who he is. How do you counter that? That's...
Yeah, that's a good point. And especially because, you know, Biden apparently was holed up at Camp David for like 2 weeks prepping for his debate. And we saw how that
went. You say,
prepped too much.
What's the stupid cliche? The paralysis by analysis.
Yep.
You know the stuff. Trust that you know the stuff. Go do the stuff.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave, it's not your birthday again, is it?
It is.
Oh, look at that.
Yes, I'll see you tonight.
Happy birthday.
Hey, you know what? Hey, keep celebrating, man. It's all good.
Yeah, that was really, really fun. You're always so effusively welcoming when we come into the broadcast booth. For the first time ever, I walked over to visit with Chip and Jim Edmonds in the TV side. They got a different vibe going on over there.
So they've got kind of like a like a New York City nightclub and kind of thing going on. They've got strobe lights. They've got some things that they've got a smoke machine in there. I don't know if you saw that, but
yes.
I mean, they do it upright. We're a little more subdued. We're a little more just radio is a little different than TV. They got a little more pizzazz than we do, but we're there. I love going over there, man. It's fun.
Yeah, I felt like I should be being turned down by a pretty girl over there.
or you should be turning her down. That's a better way to put that, right?
Never happened. So Wheels was telling me that the Cardinals have made even more changes, bringing up Chajacy, who I'm very interested to see. Sending down Victor Scott, your thoughts on all that?
So Chajacy, here's the primer on Chajacy. Well, first of all, I mean, Victor Scott's not going to play because Michael Cianni is the guy right now. And Victor Scott's going to be a really good center fielder, but Michael Cianni already is. And Victor's, kind of still learning, and he's going to be kind of the man of the future for sure, but he needs to play. He's not going to play, so he needs to play with Walker playing every day. And we've got either Nupar, or Burleson playing. So I think it's good for Victor Scott, but Chajacy is, Chajacy is very interesting. The primer on him is, he doesn't wear batting gloves. He can flat out hit. I mean, he is a hitting machine, not a great defender. I mean, I didn't see him as a great defender. Maybe he's worked on that and gotten it better. But so that's kind of the ABCs of him. But you got to give a young guy a chance at some point. Yeah. They got him in the deal, and it's like let's see what we got at the big league level.
Yeah, and obviously he's playing shortstop tonight, and Mason Wynn just needs a break. He's been playing a lot lately. And talk about the rookie wall a little bit, Rick, because. I mean, he had a little debut last year, but I think he's already played something like 200 or 250 more innings at short than he's ever played in a season before. Just talk about that experience of being in the first time through a full 6-month season where all the games matter as opposed to your development mattering more.
Yeah, Kevin, that's a great thought. And it's kind of a misunderstood or maybe not understood. We don't talk about it enough. But the point is we all have rhythms in our life. We all have rhythms of when we wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night and kind of when we work out and all, and when we're off rhythm, we're off rhythm. Well, the rhythm of a minor league player is, you get to mid-September, you're done, or you get to 150 games and you're done. And now they're starting later, ending later. But the point is you're physically, your body's telling you, okay, it's time to just kind of chill and be done. And for a young player, especially, and it's not about them not being strong enough.
Right.
And, in shape and up. That's not the point. But your body just kind of tends to shut down. And we see that all the time with pitchers, for sure. But you also see it with position players that once they get to that 150th game, as a young player, you just wonder whether they're going to be able to fight through that or not.
And what about just the mental side of that too, Rick? I mean, yes, the physical part is a big deal because you have the full major league spring training and then 6 months of a season as opposed to a little bit shorter spring training. And then, of course, again, your whole life as a minor leaguer is about your development.
Yeah.
And as a big leaguer playing for the Cardinals this year, your whole life is about trying to win today's game.
Yeah, so I would go back to my sleep example. When I have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm not used to it, it's both a mental and a physical challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them. I mean, it's kind of like, oh man, it's like, oh, I'm looking at a six. I'm not used to that. Now, I have moments in my life where that is my rhythm, but not during the season. So, I really do feel like the mental part in baseball is critical. And, Mason not only has been carrying the mental part of kind of playing longer games, but he has been a pivotal part of the Cardinals offense for a long time. I mean, when Arenado and Goldschmidt were not hitting, he and Burley were carrying the team. They really were. I mean, he was the guy. And, you know, when you're the guy and you're 22 years old, that's a lot. That's a lot to put on somebody's shoulders.
So a lot of what we've seen with Thomas DeJacy in the minors was that early this year he struggled, and he had to make some of the same adjustments that we've talked about with Jordan Walker, laying off breaking balls down, laying off breaking balls away, attacking fastballs more in the zone. And he's been a lot better. For people to look at his minor league numbers, he's been a lot better since early June than he was in April and May. So on that, kind of like noting that, and that's what he's been working on, I feel like I've seen a little bit better of that from Walker. I know the five-hit game kind of makes the numbers look bigger than they really are for the last couple of weeks, but I do see minor changes that look like he's going in the right direction.
Well, the home run that he hit was a breaking ball down and away.
Right.
And, you know, we've not been trying to pick on him, but the point is, you know, it's not that hard to figure out if you're watching video of him. Throw him sliders down and away if you're right-handed.
Yep.
Throw him changeups down and away if you're left-handed, and he's going to swing and miss. That's just been happening. But, I mean, and that's not taking anything away from his ability. He's going to learn how to hit that pitch. He's going to learn how to be a good player. Nobody questions that. Nobody does. I mean, that's around him or, you know, a lot of people in his corner, including me. But the point is, that's where he is now. But the home run that he hit, the last home run he hit, was a pretty good slider down and away, maybe even off the plate. He went down to get it and slammed it into the bleachers. So, you know, I do think you're right. He's making adjustments. You know, adjustments at the big league level are slow, though. I mean, you have to kind of you take two steps back, three steps forward. It's just how it works.
All right, buddy. Have a great game tonight.
You bet. Thanks, guys.